The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. And you know, you don't need me to tell you, but this day next week is Christmas Day. Yes. By this stage, you'll have eaten 5 selection boxes, 44 mince pies. And you'll be wondering, is that turkey cooked or not? Is it going to be too dry or too moist or undercooked? My advice to you is, on the whole turkey thing, is get one of those meat thermometers. You can't go wrong then. You stick it into it and it tells you if it's red up as far as poultry, your turkey is cooked. Anyway, that's this day next week. They're still talking about Christmas things, obviously, in the papers. It's full of it. I love these ones because they always have the science of Christmas. I'm a big fan of science. Now they have the science of decorating your Christmas tree. Now, most people have their Christmas tree decorated by now. In fact, I see that a lot of the home stores and Woody's and all those people are offering half-price Christmas trees. Anyway, if you want to go and see if your Christmas tree fits the scientific formula, you can check it now. You should have 6.2 baubles for each foot of Christmas tree and 100 fairy lights for each foot. So there you go, 6.2 baubles. What does 0.2 of a bauble look like? 6.2 baubles for every foot and then 100 fairy lights for every foot. The Guardian is writing today that there's a move towards pastels. How does a pastel work on Christmas trees? Teal and raspberry, plum and pale pink are the in colours for those who are fashionable and decorating their Christmas tree this year. There's also been a mention of peacock feathers on your Christmas tree. Ah, go on out of that. Go on out of that. But most people still choose red, gold, silver with warm white lights. We're red and white, I think, mainly red and white. And then we have the warm white lights with, at the flick of a switch, you can turn them into flashy coloured ones, which is great. 1/6 of people. Did you read this in the papers today on the Christmas shopping? 1 in 6 as opposed to 1/6, which is a bigger proportion. 1 in 6 Irish shoppers started Christmas gift shopping in August. Come on. And 23% have been conducting a year-round search. But there are still people who are sitting at home there and they sort of wear it as a badge of honour that they haven't started their Christmas shopping yet. No, I haven't done any. I haven't bought a thing. I've allowed myself 3 hours on Christmas Eve. And that'll be it. That'll be fine. That always does me. And of course, you can't be, you can't be buying good presents in 3 hours on Christmas Eve, can you? Really? Like, what sort of thought goes into that? And then the heartache and the stress of running around. So I can boast. I say I have about two to do, and then I'm finished. Which is a nice... I'm not gloating and I'm not shaming anybody who hasn't done an ounce of Christmas shopping yet. I'm just stating the facts. And while I'm stating facts, the elf on the shelf was swimming in a bowl of Rice Krispies when we got up this morning. I don't know what your elf on the shelf was doing, but that's what ours was doing. Rose, if you're planning your Christmas, you should know that tomorrow is your last chance to send letters and parcels by standard post. So they'll get to their destination by Christmas. So tomorrow is your last opportunity for that. If you're sending a letter off to Jose Mourinho to commiserate him on losing his job, that probably won't get to him because he's in the UK. Or maybe he's back in his home country now. You see, it's mad. He didn't do badly. I'm just looking at the stats here. He's been in charge for 144 games at Manchester United and he has a 58.33% win rate. Now, Alex Ferguson's win rate over 1,500 games, yeah, it's a lot more, it's more than 10 times, was 59.67. David Moyes, who took over from Alex Ferguson, 52.94, and Louis van Gaal, 52.43. So he did well. Like, he's a good rate. And they're going to have to pay him off. They reckon it could be to the tune of £22.5 million sterling. Nice money if you can get it. And he's only in his 50s, isn't he? I think he's 55, Jose Mourinho. And I wonder, does 22.5 million, does that make up for the embarrassment of losing your job? How much money does it take to make up for the embarrassment of losing your job? 22.5 million sounds like it might just do it. It might just do it. Brexit has been out of the news for a while there. It's gone quiet. But Jennifer O'Connell is writing in the Irish Times today about some of the products that are close to our hearts that would be affected if there was a no deal Brexit, a sort of a hard exit from the European Union of the UK. Lion's Tea. Yes, Lion's Tea. It started life as a family business in Dublin, down by the canal there. I remember passing by it regularly on the way up. But it was bought over by Unilever and it's now made in the UK. So if there was going to be a hard Brexit, 20% increase in the cost of your Lion's Tea. Bad news for Lion's Tea, probably good news for Barry's Tea. HB Ice Cream, yeah, originally made out in Rathfarnham, bought over by Unilever, not made there anymore. The Rathfarnham plant closed in 2005. So that would increase in price. And biscuits, and we eat a lot of biscuits. The how much we spend every year on biscuits. You'd never guess it. You'd never guess it. 10 times what Jose Mourinho is going to get as a payoff. 230 million euro is spent on biscuits in Ireland every year. And most of them are imported from the UK. So they would be see an increase of 27%. And Fairy Liquid, that's Ireland's most popular washing up liquid. And that would cost more as well if there was a hard Brexit. Speaking of cleaning, I got a text from my wife, Jenny. And she found the most amazing thing for cleaning, she says. It's a Vileda 1-2 spray mop. Right, so it's a mop. But what it has is, it has a container in the handle of the mop in which you put water and a little drop of cleaning fluid. And then as you go, you press the handle down and it sprays in front of it. And then you mop. Imagine. It's amazing. So she's very excited by that. Very excited by that. The Vileda 1-2 spray mop. I've just been online looking at it. It says, perfect for everyday spills in the home. The handle has a special compartment which can be filled with water or cleaning solution. Then simply pull the trigger and a fine mist sprays from the bottom of the mop into the floor or onto the floor. Simply spray and mop straight away. No need for a bucket. Microfiber pad for efficient cleaning. Ideal for wood, laminate, tiled and vinyl flooring. Flat mop head ideal for larger floors with a pivot head to reach under furniture. Easy to use. Machine washable pad. There you go. The beauty product of the year, before we get to more serious matters, is, according to market research, the NPD Group Skincare has seen a revival in 2018 and was valued at 300 million in the period from January 2018 to June 2018, increase of 4%. And no surprise that the most Googled beauty product in 2018 was in fact a skincare product, Filorga. It's a French brand. It was founded in 1978 by a French doctor of aesthetic medicine. Filorga Skincare is rooted in the science of how injectables can help to slow the signs of aging, but in an at-home cream formula. So they're saying it does what the Botox does. Filorga, €45 will set you back, and it's the beauty product of the year. Just so you know, you can fascinate your friends with that. On more serious matters, we were speaking to Emer Doyle yesterday, and Emer has a very sick son, Fionn, age 7, and she's got letters in the recent past from her bank, Permanent TSB, to say that her mortgage has been sold on to Pepper, and she is wondering what's going to happen. And it's the uncertainty and not knowing that's bothering her at a time when she should be just worrying about her little son and her family and Christmas and things like that. So David Hall came sort of trotting over the crest of the hill like the cavalry, and he's stepping in and he's going to take over all that worry from Emer. And her story struck a lot of people yesterday, and everybody went to her GoFundMe page, and there was an amazing reaction overnight. Fionn's Fight is the name of the GoFundMe page. And it was amazing. I'm just looking at, you know, the huge reaction that people and the comments there, people listened in and they just had to go and donate. And 10,000, the GoFundMe page increased by 10,000 overnight. So thanks on Emer's behalf to everybody who bothered to get on and make a donation overnight. That's very kind of you. And truly in the Christmas spirit. Vicky Phelan motivated a lot of those people to do it. She says, she tweeted yesterday, heartbroken for this family. Oh my God, do people working in these banks have no compassion? Of course they don't. We fell into arrears when I was diagnosed in 2014, and to say the banks didn't give a shit that I had cancer is an understatement. I will donate. Please support. That's that. And there was loads of texts, lovely texts and emails about Emer and everybody feeling her pain and wanting to help. Now, also came in to Ray at RT overnight from Deborah. She said, I just thought I would send you and your team a quick email to wish you all a very happy Christmas and New Year. I'm just sitting at my desk at Ballinspittle National School listening to all the children singing for their special song they will perform for our concert tomorrow, Thursday, in the hall. They'll be singing and signing A Spaceman Came Travelling by Krista Berg. Fantastic effort with our students from second class to sixth and to our principal, Tommy Gunning, who is our principal and our ISL ambassador. Maybe you can give a shout out to all the kids in Ballinspittle National School. And there, that's done. There. Now, let's see what you're saying on text. Ray, if you leave your shopping till Christmas Eve, yes, you will get it done, but it will cost twice as much. That is the main downside, because it's your last chance. You have to buy what you see, regardless of price. Christmas trees, tree in houses are done to the taste of the homeowner. The planning, etc., is for shops and businesses. Do it as you see fit, says Reg. How are you, Reg? I'm 56 and can't wait to get stuck into sweets and chocolates, but don't eat any in the 2 weeks before. Aha! So, yeah, you abstain in the 2 weeks leading up to Christmas and then you splurge. It's called the Abstain Splurge Christmas Diet. Read all the hype over Christmas. It is all crazy. I wouldn't go near any cities or shopping centres at this time of the year. Our families have stopped buying and giving gifts to one another. It's a pure waste. People have more than enough now, only taking what they get to charity shops in January. Just give to a few needy charities. We all just have a dinner like any other day with just a few little extras, nothing crazy. People are off their heads shopping like that for one day. It's only for children and Santa, says Anna. Anna, the only thing I'd say, and I was thinking about this morning, is that it's an opportunity to say thanks to people who've helped you out throughout the year. It is that, you know, and it's an opportunity to let them know that you appreciate what they did. And I use Christmas as an opportunity to do that, and I think a lot of people do. I do agree with you that within families there's a lot of waste. And there's a lot of gifts that won't be used. And yeah, and there's probably things in the press from last year that haven't been used, and they'll be there next year and the year after. On Jose Mourinho, you know what they say, Ray? What's richer than a Premier League manager, a sacked Premier League manager? That's Joe, Man United fan. And mop, yes, I have that mop a few months now, and it's fantastic. Best thing ever for wooden floors. So there's a vote of confidence there. The reviews are in for the Valida 1-2 mop with the spray function. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Good afternoon. Bing Crosby. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. I do all my Christmas shopping in May, June, and July, year on year, all except animal charity calendars, which are available from mid November. We're having lamb this year, spare us the turkey. Lucy, not fussy, as long as it smells nice for her canine nose. I had to read that twice. Will you speak to DCC Roads about the bridge at the East Link? I was stuck there for 40 minutes trying to get to Whitehall home. That's Paul and Lucy the dog, I take it. So it's lamb for Christmas dinner there. And I dare you buy them up for Jenny for Christmas. Well, she's bought one for herself already. And we're at a stage, I think, where it's, you know, we tell each other what we want for Christmas. That's the deal. I don't know how you sort it out in your relationship. And then there'll be a couple of little surprises, but mainly, you know, you're told what to buy, and that's fine by me. Nobody's disappointed. And as it happens, I won't go into too much detail, but there was a cleaning product ordered last year. So there you go. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we've been inviting people in over the last week or so and asking them to look back on 2018. And today's the turn of Dublin footballer Philly McMahon. Afternoon, Philly.
Afternoon.
Thanks a million for coming in. It has been a crazy year for you, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's been up and down. But sure, that's what life's all about.
Yeah. We'll start with the highs, I suppose, first.
Yeah.
The four in a row. Yeah,
it was... It was nice to win the four in a row. Nice to see the happiness we've given the Dublin fans and the Dublin community.
Yeah. And you never tire of winning All-Irelands. That's a stupid question.
Yeah, no, definitely not. We all kind of all realise that it's a short period of time. playing at that level. So it's trying to grasp it as much as you can while you can. And as I said, it's kind of understanding who you represent, not just the impact you have on yourself and your family, but the wider community.
Yeah. And the manager, Jim Gavin, I read an article that he works in air traffic control.
He does, yeah.
And he brings the same approach to managing the Dublin team.
Does he bring the same approach?
He's very methodical.
Sure.
He's very methodical. He would be. Jumbo jets coming in with 300 people or each. You have to be quite specific, don't
Definitely.
You?
Yeah, he would be. That's why he's probably so relaxed on the sideline, you know. He's always thinking in the moment, and some people challenge that style of the way he is, but it works, doesn't it? That's the success has shown.
Yeah. We spoke about the book before, and I watched the documentary. The documentary's going to the cinema now.
It was in the cinema
last week.
So we had a viewing and a Q&A after. It was a lovely evening with all the people that were in the documentary, all the brave people that stepped out into the public and spoke about their addiction.
Yeah.
And are chipping away, basically, by doing that, chipping away at the stigma. Like,
what was it like for you to see yourself on a huge screen? Is that a bit freaky?
Yeah. It was like, the reason why I thought the guys done, Kim Barkley and Aoife had done a great job in the documentary, was that they kind of, you hit loads of different emotions. Like, you know, you hit certain different emotions because of my father was on it. But it was like, there was happy, there was sad, there was anger, there was kind of cringe at sometimes, you know, but it was really put well, and it was kind of, they touched on all the stakeholders in terms of the topic.
And it's nice to have your dad in that documentary, isn't it?
Yeah, so we would have more footage of my dad, because they can only put a certain amount on the documentary, so we actually have the uncut version,
which
my mum's going to show us all at Christmas time, so that's going to be lovely. Yeah, it's going to be nice. It's special memories for us, and the first time I heard his voice on the documentary was quite tough, you know, and my poor mum, she was, we were all watching it in the house, and our phone was hopping, you know, and everybody was ringing her saying she was doing great and she's doing brilliant. And then I was like, "Mam, will you watch the documentary?" But she said to me after she couldn't, because it was so tough for her. So
it was the 1st of July your dad died?
1st of July, yeah.
But he'd been sick for quite
a while. He'd been sick over a year with stomach cancer, yeah.
Right. That's a horrible thing.
But he gave me lessons right through it, and to never give up, and to use humour in any way you can possibly do it. Like, you know, when he got diagnosed, he said, you know, the doctor said, "Look, if you're terminally ill," and he says, "Am I going to lose my hair?" But he was already bald, like, you know. Right. So he was that type of guy. They didn't want to know the time frame, and just battled on right till the end, you know.
Yeah. Tell us about that, the moment at the end of the All Ireland against Tyrone, and you put on a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I had a friend of mine, a really good childhood friend of mine, who texted me and said, "Look out on the hill when you're walking around the parade." And I normally look around in the crowd and like soak in the energy, and couldn't see anything. And then at the end, I was looking around when we brought the cup over to the hill, and then I was just about to walk away, and then I looked down at the barrier and I see my friend, and he had the T-shirt, and he had a T-shirt with Walter White, because my dad, he looked like Walter White, bald, had a kind of a beard, and it kind of had a stencil of Walter White and saying, "Philly's here," you know. So he threw it over the barrier and they stuck it on. It was very emotional.
So your dad was there in spirit?
Yeah, well, I'm very spiritual, you know. When I was struggling through that year, the last 2 years, in fact, in terms of football, he was all that was on my mind, you know.
Yeah, driving you on.
Yeah, definitely.
Did he play football himself?
So my dad would have grown up in the Troubles.
Yeah.
He was from West Belfast, and he would have found it very hard to play sport, because he would have had to fight for his beliefs and got involved in the Republican movement, and that's what happened.
Did he talk to you much about growing up in Belfast?
Yeah, he would have. Yeah, he would have spoke about what you had to do and everything. Yeah.
How is your ma now? Because it's only 6 months since.
Yeah, she's the typical human being who's struggling and with grief, and she's grieving, and she's good and bad days, but she's the rock of the family. She's a hero in all our eyes, and she keeps us all together. So
there's a lovely moment in the documentary where your mother talks to Aileen, who lost her daughter to heroin addiction.
Yeah.
And it's just two mothers.
It's beautiful, yeah. It's bonding a lovely piece, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And you just, that's happening every day, right? Like there's mothers all over this country that are being tortured in their own thoughts, thinking that it's their fault, you know, thinking that they've done things wrong in terms of the recovery or the kids, showing the kids tough love. And mothers never really do anything wrong in that case. They always support, and it's the other siblings or the other person in the family that always think, you know, you shouldn't do that. You should kick them out of the house, or you should show them tough love. But mothers, they generally stay close to the addicts. It's, you know, it's the way they are. But that's why we need to support families more so in this issue.
So you lost John, and it wasn't to a drug overdose, but it was as a result of him being a heroin addict.
Mm.
And nearly one person dies in Ireland a day because of a drug overdose. And we have a very high rate, third highest in Europe. Mm. So we need to do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've taken this on. It's sort of John, to create a legacy for John, is it?
Yeah, well, generally what happens is when you have somebody that dies from a drug or alcohol related death, depending on the relationship you have with the individual, there's a kind of an activist style that you will feel from the grieving. A special death is basically very similar to a suicide, which is the equivalent of two deaths, and it takes around, they say, an around average of 4 years to actually understand grieving from it. So for me, my role is to try, you know, use my profile as a sporting person to help this issue, and to do things that John would have liked me to do in terms of helping others, and I suppose help family members that are going through what I went through. So, you know, that's what I would have loved if I had the chance again.
And is any of it motivated by, you know, if this was around, if whatever you do was happening when John was alive, that maybe he'd still be alive today?
Yeah, there's a huge part of it, right? So John was 6'4". He was very thin. And then when he took heroin for a period of time, it took his physical appearance changed. So when John went to London, he became clean because he didn't know any other addicts or drug dealers. But he still found it very hard to reintegrate into society. He couldn't socialise with other people that weren't addicts. He couldn't get a job. So that had a huge impact on him actually going back on drugs. So the social hooks in heroin is massive. Societal hooks is having a huge impact on addicts, especially with the stigma and the shame.
Okay, we'll get to the stigma and shame in a moment. You've just come from Mountjoy today, and you're working with inmates in there. What are you doing with them?
So we have, excuse the language, we have a movement going on in there called the Unfucked Movement.
Right.
And basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to help the individual change their self-beliefs, which impacts the culture, which impacts the culture in the prison, and then hopefully when they reintegrate into society, they impact the communities.
Right.
So it's kind of a movement in many ways.
So the Unfucked, there's three C's. What do they stand for?
Culture, change, community.
Right.
Yeah. So this is a prisoner-led, it's a prisoner-led program. So I'm only facilitating it, they're the ones coming up with it. So it's theirs, they own it. They have a sense of belonging to it, so they really respect it.
So the aim for them is that when they get out, they'll have something to offer their community in a real way.
Yeah, well, see, the biggest problem is it's called restorative justice, right? Prison is meant to be, if you commit a crime, they take your liberty away, and that's how you do your punishment. But there has to be a kind of a rehabilitation process to it, or else they'll just keep committing crimes. We'll have more victims in society, and ultimately it costs the country a lot of money, and we'll have a lot more problems. So when these guys reintegrate in society, they've changed their underlying issue that's ultimately led them to the crime, and hopefully then they can, you know, find a way of getting back in society, because they have a lot of problems. When they get out, you have the newspaper standing outside the prison taking pictures of them, and they're kind of going, right, I'm in the newspaper now, I'm not going to get a job, but I'm going to go back and commit crime.
Yeah.
So the media doesn't help.
It's the easiest path.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a body and mind part to this. So you, they work out in the gym, and you give them programs to do that, and then you were talking to them today.
Yeah.
You regularly give them what would you call it, talks, classes?
Talks, yeah. So what we're trying to do is we're looking at the everyday actions and thoughts of them, of a prisoner. Right, see what they're going through. So this time of the year, it's very tough for prisoners because they're not with their families at Christmas, right? So it's really tough drugs in prisons now start to increase because they're trying to deal with these issues. So the drugs obviously surpasses the pain that they have and gets rid of the pain. So today we'd bring them, they'd go in and do a gym session for an hour, and they'd come up and do a talk, and we'd chat about certain topics and how they're feeling and stuff like that. And we do a load of other activities, like we do sports days, we do, you know, days, we're creating a day for the family to come in 2 days before Christmas.
Right.
Just so that, you know, it has an impact on the families more so than not on the prisoner. The families feel.
And is that a new thing?
That's new. That's come in with the Unfucked movement. So.
Right.
Very
who came up with that idea?
Myself and the prisoners.
Right. So and then who brokered it then with the prison authorities?
We had to then go to the governor and say, is this possible? And they're very supportive in that, because they realise that, look, if we can support guys, you know, and their family members coming in close to Christmas,
yeah,
it's going to have an impact on the drug taking in the prison.
I know that you said in either in the book or in the documentary that when you went into Mountjoy first that you recognised four or five of the guys from Ballymun. Do you feel a huge responsibility to them now because you've started something with them?
I don't feel a responsibility because I'm not in there for any particular person. I'm in there for anybody that wants to change.
Right.
So if for example, if any of them five lads didn't want to get involved in my programme, I will still continue on. But I ultimately want to help them go through a journey that I've maybe a small part to play in it, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, these guys can be incredible people, like, when they get a second chance in life. Like, I'll give you an example. Our first guy that we had in a programme that reintegrated in society, I'd ring him every, he'd text me or ring me every week, so we stay connected, and he rang me today, and he actually said to me, he says, it's just the simple things in life I really love doing now. And he says, I actually like my missus giving out to me now. You know, so little simple things. But yeah, again, it's just this thing that education with people, we got to realise that these are people that have really deep underlying issues that are impacting their choices.
Can you explain to people, because, you know, I've had Anne Buckley in here and various people over the years, and it's people find it difficult to understand about, you know, and your book was called The Choice, and you often hear people say, well, I was brought up in exactly the same circumstances as those people, and I didn't take drugs, and I'm fine, you know. You've heard that yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. The big thing for me is that in life, if you are living a good life, you know, go and help others. If not, find a way to overcome that problem that you might have, or get help to overcome that problem. And just because you went through that pathway, it doesn't mean you should judge others that haven't went through that pathway. So we can never, it's the program, one of the values we have, and one of the values I was given from a very young age, is to be non-judgmental in life. And when you have somebody saying that, that doesn't mean they're bad people, they're just people that have different values.
Mm.
So you don't look negatively upon people that are in vulnerable positions.
And you learned an awful lot from your brother's mistakes.
Yeah.
And can you remember a time when you said, I'm not going to go down that path, that's not for me? Did you see him at a...
There wasn't one particular event. You know, but it would have been over probably when I was hitting about 15, 16, that the guys that I was hanging around with, some of them that are in Mountjoy now, they wouldn't invite me to go off and commit crime. Like, so some of them, they'd go off with one of the young lads that's really small. He'd be able to put his hand on their tails in shopping centres, and they'd be the security if the kid got
sketch,
caught.
Yeah.
They'd come back to the blocks with loads of money, and I'd be like, oh, geez, I like a bit of that money. But they knew not to invite me because my brother wouldn't be happy with them.
Okay.
But also, I was playing sport as well. So I was fortunate that that happened for me, because ultimately, if I went and done one of them, I probably would have been hooked because of the money situation. No different to what's happening now in social disadvantaged areas, where there's people, as kids, you know, being groomed to sell drugs.
Yeah. And you met those girls, and they were saying, you know, they have to work very hard to earn 100 yeah. euro, and then there's people driving around in what, Audis, was yeah. it, what, BMWs or whatever, 181s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's trying to show these people, instead of, like, the old educational piece of don't do drugs or don't commit crime, that hasn't worked. Like,
well, what do you think will work?
We got to show them. That's, I'm hoping that this movement creates a huge network of people that have made mistakes in their lives, and they can go back into the communities and show these young people, this is the pathway I took and this is how bad it can go. No different to the way I looked at John, the pain he had. The message, we ultimately don't want to tell our kids to go on drugs, we don't, but we have the fourth highest overdose rate in Europe. Like that has a huge impact.
So people who have recovered, to go back into their communities and, you know, say, you know, if you choose this way,
be an example.
Yeah. And just on the decriminalisation of drugs, and you went to Portugal and they introduced that back in 2001, and it seems to be working for them, is it?
Yeah, it's. I think the message has to be clear that no policy in the world is perfect. You know, so you'll have people countering the decriminalisation model and certainly the Portuguese model, and they're right to. Everything has flaws, everything. But certainly the policy we have now is worse. So I would see the Portuguese model working much better than what we have at the minute. You'll have people arguing that when you decriminalise drugs, you normalise drugs. That's a confusion piece. That's legalisation of drugs. So when you decriminalise drugs, it's still illegal to take drugs. Okay, still illegal. So the message is still the same. Don't take drugs, it's still illegal to take.
It's what happens after you're caught.
It's how you're dealt with it.
Yes. Yeah.
So you break down the stigma and the shame, right?
So what happens in Portugal?
Well, you're basically brought in front of a dissuasion committee, which is basically...
A dissuasion committee?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's called a dissuasion commission. It sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So you're basically sitting in front of two, maybe three people. And
who are they?
Well... You'd have the person that's in charge of the committee, basically.
Right.
He'd be sitting there on there'd be probably a doctor or a psychologist depending.
And medical people, so it would be medical people.
Could be a social worker, yeah. And basically they're just asking the questions of, have you got a problematic drug issue, you know? And then they give you a fine and they refer you onto a program, and it's up to you if you want to take that option. So it breaks down that stigma. Like, there's so many people in this country right now that are taking their lives because of that shame and stigma of being a heroin addict or a junkie. Like, that's the word, that horrible word that's being used. And if we break that stigma down, ultimately people will be able to say, okay, I have a drug problem, I'm going to get help.
Yeah,
it's not a problem to say that I have a problem.
So in Portugal, they go and they sit in front of that committee or commission, and then they're sent off to get medical help.
Yeah,
and if they're caught again, then it's a criminal offence.
They're sanctioned, yeah.
Right,
they're sanctioned then, yeah. But if whatever crime
and the dealer is that's a crime.
Well, here's the good thing about it is the crime will go up. Why? Well, because. It depends on the trends of drugs coming into, certain drugs coming into the country, certain drugs coming into Europe. But the big thing is that the guards will be able to focus on drug dealers, not drug addicts.
Yeah. You spoke to, is it Pat Lee? Is he the assistant commissioner?
Assistant commissioner, yeah.
And he said that a guard arresting a person who takes drugs has never cured them of addiction.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, have you ever heard a guard say to anybody else that they arrested a drug addict, and basically the drug addict got a criminal record for it and helped them then eventually come off drugs? It's never happened.
Never happened. Right?
So there's no positivity around incriminating drug addicts.
So you're going to keep shouting that out from the rooftops?
Yeah, we need to. We need to. There's, like, you know, you've got a huge amount of emphasis put on mental health, which is brilliant. You have over 1 million people from darkness to light marching, and that's amazing. There's a huge amount of deaths in terms of drug addiction in this country, drug and alcohol related deaths, and we need to get together as a country and come together and say, hold on, this is not good enough.
You don't drink?
I don't drink, no.
Never?
No.
Right.
Never drink, yeah. Never like, just never like the taste of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you ever feel that you're missing out?
No, I was very lucky. I was able to have the crack with the lads, and personality-wise, I sometimes look like the person that's drunk in terms of that. But I tasted it when I was very young, and I just didn't like the taste of it and just said, no, it's not for me.
Congratulations, you got engaged.
I did, thanks.
Under the northern lights.
You've
set the bar fairly high for all the other lads around the place.
Well, I have a friend and he closed down Stephen's Green, so I kind of had to the bar a little bit, and the Northern Lights was the next step.
And did Sarah know what she got an inkling, or
I don't know. We did it towards the end of the holiday, so I kind of, she probably had a lot of people saying to her, like, you know, he's going to propose over there, so I kind of had to play it cool. And funnily, we had it in Iceland, and we were going for a meal one night, and I said to the receptionist, I'm going to propose to my girlfriend on the way back, will you take it? And he was really introverted, like, and he was like, so we were walking back in, I said, like, come on, we get a picture at the Blue Lagoon, the pill. And your man's looking at me like, to go, is it going to happen now? Is it going to? So she's like, ah, no, you got to picture yourself. So she ruined it. And your man was looking at me going, is it going to happen? What's going to happen? So she ruined it a couple of occasions, but we were very lucky that the second last night we were there, we got the Northern Lights. Hadn't been seen in 2 months. And we got it, so it was incredible.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
And what did you do? Because this is, you know, often comes up in conversation. Did you get a pretend ring, or was it a real ring? Or
No, I got a real ring for her. Yeah,
yeah.
She's very hard to buy presents and stuff like that. So I was in the mindset of actually going and getting a pretend ring to then get her to pick her own. But I'm glad she's happy with the one I picked out.
Right,
at least I think, anyway.
right. So you went off and bought her.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
On your own.
Well, I think I know our style a little bit, you know.
Right.
So.
And how did you know the size?
I didn't. I had a chat with my friend, and he kind of gave me a bit of an education piece on what to do and everything right. else. And then I just went in, and she had an idea. She spoke about a little bit before about her. Our nanny's kind of style, and right. So kind of went off that.
Yeah. There's loads of lovely texts here. Will you stay with us? We'll just take a commercial break, and we'll read out some of those to you. Philly McMahon's going to stay with us.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Philly McMahon is still with us. We're talking to 2018 and other things. Philly is a great advocate for all walks of life. Lost my dad to cancer in 2015 after a year of illness. I'd give anything to hear his voice again. Fair play, Philly man. That's Philly man there. Yeah, that's going to be a moment, isn't it? When you're, you know, you'll all be sitting around the telly and...
Yeah, yeah. That'll be special. Like, yeah. You know, Christmas was very special for us because we used to have John back from London, and now there's 2 seats empty. So we'll have to fill that with a bit of energy, and that'll be it, video.
I really admire that Philly uses his position to help others. He has a great talent for communicating, and when you can get people to listen to what you have to say, it's priceless. That's a Ballymun listener. And thank you, Philly, for speaking out about such a personal thing to you. My brother died by overdose 12 years ago, and it still hurts so much to talk about. A part of that hurt is the shame I feel about how he died. There's a stigma surrounding death by drug overdose. I'm now a professional, a mother of 2, but still find it so hard to explain how my brother died. Please continue to do your work. And that shame and stigma you experienced in a real way, so much so that you changed your name.
Yeah. So my name when I was younger was Caffrey, and then I changed to my dad's name, which was McMahon, yeah. So that was my mum's maiden name, and I changed it to McMahon.
Right.
Mm.
And looking back on that decision, how do you feel?
I would have liked and always to have my dad's name in anyway,
right,
McMahon,
right.
But obviously it was wrong, you know, that I was uneducated on the whole drug issue, and the country wasn't equipped to deal with the heroin epidemic that we had, and certainly Ballymun wasn't. And if I'd have known now, you know, if I'd have known back then, sorry, what I know now, I certainly wouldn't have been embarrassed, or I wouldn't have had shame around my brother, his problems, his issues, like.
Yeah. Lovely to hear, Philly. Read his book. What a fabulous guy, doing such great work. He's not just a great footballer. Happy Christmas to Philly and his family, Maura and Turnure. And wants to say there. Oh, yeah. Anonymous wants to say they were devastated to hear Philly got engaged. Seriously, though, wish him well. And Philly came and spoke at our GAA club, Scotstown GAA, several weeks ago, and the impact of his talk cannot be measured. It should be mandatory for all TY students if you had the time, or they could clone you, Philly.
Yeah.
People have got to take responsibility for their own decisions and mistakes in life. Only then can they grow and change. Take agency, realise you got yourself where you are, only you can get yourself out. Dan in Cork. Is it that straightforward?
No, it's not. I think we all, you know, life is all about solving problems, as I said. And then when you have a problem, you get 2 things. You get positive emotions or negative emotions. Negative is feedback that you have a problem to solve. And if you can't solve it yourself, you need to get help. So you can't just say it's up to yourself, because ultimately when you are an addict, it's so powerful. You're so consumed with this drug, that you need help and support. You know, you it's substance-based addicts are the lucky ones, right? Because with support and help and commitment, they can, they'll understand quickly enough what their issue is, and they can overcome it. It's the people that have problems like gambling addictions and, you know, even food addictions that takes you 10 or 15 years to realise, hold on, this is hidden and I have a problem now. So I don't think it's as easy as saying if you make a mistake, it's up to you to solve it.
Great lad, Philly. Did a presentation in Granard, County Longford last year, and he was fantastic the way he got through to all the young lads in the room. Didn't leave until he had a photo with everyone and left a lasting impression on us all in Granard. A great role model to young people, the way he lives his life on and off the field. That's Thomas there. And ask Philly about his time as a soccer player over at Nottingham Forest. That was in the book, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you got a trial, did you?
Yeah, soccer was my actually first sport I played, and then at the age of 14, I went over to Nottingham Forest, me and a friend of mine, Mark Hartigan in Ballymun, and we went over, we were playing a team of trialists, and we didn't really get a call back, and we kind of offered a couple of more trials after that, but gave the sport up straight away when I came back, because I fell in love with
And did you get a call earlier this year to go over and to be a strength and conditioning coach for some Premiership club? Was that this year?
No, I've been asked to consult. I think I was asked to consult 3 years ago with a team over there.
And now Jim McGuinness, of course, true Celtic, and now he's got his first managerial role in America.
Yeah. He was in Russia. I was in China as well.
Was he in China? Yeah.
So, yeah, like there's a really powerful culture in GAA, and there's a lot of things that other sports can learn from the sport itself.
Like what?
You know, culture is a huge thing. Like, you know, in soccer in this country, there's a very poor culture. Like,
right.
If you look, you can go right through the ranks of it. You can talk. You can start from the Irish team. The setup itself, the FEI, the Airtricity League, the Irish Football League, and there's a lot that can be done.
Right. Would you ever go back to soccer in a managerial role?
Managerial, I'm involved. I've been involved the last couple of years with soccer. I've been consulting with teams.
Right.
So I won't say the names of them because I don't really want to.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, don't if you don't want to. I'm not going to force you. Jim Gavin, any chance Jim can come to Old Trafford and sort out the mess as Mike in Cork? Philly Anthony Ratfarnham, Philly should be working across all schools, talking to kids and informing our young adults. Great role model and super honest person. My girlfriend passed away on the 3rd of December this year, addiction. She was a good person. The drugs took her life away at 39.
Yeah,
there's going to be 350 probably empty chairs this Christmas because of drug overdoses.
In 2015, there was 700 deaths. There was 400 drug and alcohol related deaths, and there was 400 mental health related deaths. There was 120 odd car accident deaths, and then there was like 30 influenza deaths. There's campaigns every year around all of them topics apart from drug and alcohol, right? That's why there needs to be a bigger message. That's why there needs to be a bigger movement in this country to stop people losing their lives.
I think it's going to happen. And listen, continue to do what you're doing. And I know you can't make 50 of yourself, so you can't visit every school in the country, but, you know, it's just bit by bit, piece by piece. And I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. And I know it's going to be tinged with sadness because of the loss of your dad during the year, but give your mum a big hug for us. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Happy Christmas, Felix. Thank you.
Cheers.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We have music in Studio 10. Lisa Lamb is here with Shane and Denise. Good afternoon.
Hi, Ray. Yeah. Happy Christmas.
Everyone's in Christmas form.
Yes.
Particularly Denise. Now, is that a fiddle or a violin you have there?
It's a violin.
Excuse me. It's a violin.
It's a fiddle after 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Shane is on keyboards. How are you doing, Shane?
Hi, Ray.
And Lisa Lamb. Are you home for Christmas or are you home all the time?
I'm just home. I just arrived back from Donegal last night. I was there for 10 days. I've just recorded my new record. So I'm thrilled. I feel it's great to come back to the city. I was really in a proper wilderness up there with no phone signal, and so I missed loads of emails and things. So it's great to be home, and I had a great time.
And that's a big deal for you now. You've recorded your solo album. You're on a major record label.
Yes, so next year is going to be really busy and it's lovely to capture the music now. So the album is going to release in the spring of next year, and it's all my own material. So that's right. Kind of daunting, but I'm delighted.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. Yeah.
So 2019 is going to be a big year for you. You're not going to sing your own stuff today. We'd love to hear it, but it's Christmas, so you kindly offered to sing a couple of Christmas tunes for us. What's the first one?
This is River, Joni Mitchell.
Love it.
For all the Ray Darcy listeners.
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer, singing songs of joy and peace. I wish I had a river I could skate away on. But it don't snow here, it stays pretty green. I'm gonna make a lot. This crazy scene, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long, I would teach my feet to wish I had a river I could skate away on. I and my baby skate away on. I made my baby say goodbye. Cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. I wish I had a river I could skate away.
Happy Christmas, Ray.
That was a beautiful version of a beautiful song. That was gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
And that's the word that Col has used. Gorgeous, gorgeous version by Lisa & Co. would melt the hardest Scrooge's heart.
Oh,
Well done. Wow, Ray, says somebody else.
So, thank you so much.
That's brilliant, says Robbie. So all the fans are there. But the good news is that Lisa is going to stay with us and sing us out at the end of the programme. But for the moment, thank you all very
thank
much.
Thank you
thanks,
so
Lisa.
Much. Thank you.
51551 ray@rte.ie. So this day next week is going to be Christmas Day, Alison Spittle.
I know, and I haven't bought one present.
Oh, you're one of those, right?
I am so bad. Yeah, it's even too late now for the internet shopping, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, I'm going to have to do it tomorrow. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it at all.
And who do you have to buy for?
So Chris Kindle, this is it Chris Kringle or Chris Kindle?
It varies.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've heard it Chris Kindle, Chris Kringle, you know, variations of that.
Well, let's say...
And Secret Santa is another way of saying it.
Let's say it's Secret Santa. Right. I have to buy Secret Santa for one of my sisters, do the parents and all that, and then the parents' partners, you can't leave them out.
Right.
But it's very hard to buy. You don't want to go too extravagant, you don't want to go too cheap.
And you don't have a limit, no.
On a Secret Santa, we do
right.
€50.
Right.
So, I got one of my. Well, sure, I'll tell you. If she won't be listening. So, I'm thinking of trying to get her like a. She's mad into Ludo.
Right.
We've gone mad into Ludo in our family. So I want to get her like a real nice Ludo set, I think. It's very hard because DVDs are gone, CDs are gone.
Yeah.
It's very hard to buy stuff for people.
So Ludo is a board game.
A board game,
yes,
yeah.
Tanya Sweeney wrote an article on board games in the Irish Times last week. And I was going to talk about it, I didn't. But I had this board game when I was a kid called Escape from Colditz.
Oh, what a happy sound of game.
So, Colditz was a castle.
Yes.
Somewhere in sort of the west of, you know, Germany.
Okay.
Before East Germany joined it, right? And during the Second World War, they used to put the really difficult prisoners who had attempted to escape from other places.
Yeah.
They used to put them into Colditz.
Oh my, and they made a board game out of it.
They made a board game out of it, yeah. And I thought I dreamt it, and then I went online and there it was. And they've done a remake of it.
Have they?
Escape from Colditz. Yeah, so Ludo. What was Ludo one? What was that?
Ludo, you roll the dice.
Yeah.
And it's very hard. It's kind of like, it's a bit like Snakes and Ladders.
And then you get up there's four.
You race around.
Yes, and you get up to the middle, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And some people can catch you, and then you get angry.
Yeah.
It gets very personal when I play Ludo with my sisters.
Yeah. You know? Well, we were just talking about that. Oddly now, I don't know if this is good for your family or not, but I was talking to a child and adolescent psychotherapist about board games. The thing that it forces, which we don't get enough of these days, is eye contact.
Really? Yeah, that's true. Do you know what it forced a lot of in my family? Rouse.
Yes.
I remember, I'll tell you what, did you ever hear the game Frustration?
Yes.
Dad was losing on Frustration and he threw the board game across the table in frustration. It was the perfect word for that game. To be honest with you, did a psychologist say it was good for rouse or what?
No, he said eye contact because, you know, everyone has their face in the screen now, so at least if you're playing Monopoly or Ludo or whatever, at least you have to make eye contact with people.
You can plead with your sister not to take it in Ludo, or, you know, like or Snakes and Ladders or whatever.
Yeah,
it's good for eye contact, I'd say. Or charades.
Charades.
What's your favourite game now?
Headbands. We'll play headbands.
Is that the thing with the mobile phones?
No, it's not. Headbands is the... You can play it without the board game, but we have the actual thing. So you have a headband, and then you have cards. You take it out and you stick the card into the headband and say it's a chicken or something like that, and then you have to try and guess what you are.
Yeah.
And you can only... ask questions, but only yes or no answers.
Fair enough.
You see, so if you were a chicken, for example, I'd say, you'd say to me, am I an animal? And I'd say yes.
Can I go on a baguette? And then you're like, yes. We're sorted.
Could I be covered in breadcrumbs? Yes.
Spicy or normal.
So you're home from London.
I am home. I came home yesterday and I'm home because I'm doing a tour in the spring, and I was scared. I was like, oh, I need to be over here now telling the people I'm doing the tour.
Yeah.
You know?
And why did you move to London?
I moved to London to make my fortune, right?
Right.
And I don't know, I've moved to London because if I don't move now, when will I ever move? And I should give it a go. And do you know, you get itchy feet. And also, like, the rent here was not, you know, if you look at the price between London and Dublin, there's not a big difference.
And so there's a big comedy scene, is there, in London?
There's more comedy shows happening in Camden, where I live, than there is in Dublin.
Right.
The whole city, like of a night, like you could do 3 gigs a night if you wanted there.
So you start early, get into a taxi, go to the next one.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and also, like, they're always on time over there. It's a bit weird. Like, you know, you can rock up here at like 8:45 or whatever. They don't like that. So, like, you do your gigs and they do a lot of new material nights. There's a lot of opportunities for me to try stuff. And when you're over here, you're kind of aware that the people have got their babysitter and they want the good night out. So you do the good, you lay out the good yeah. Delf. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And if you want to experiment, make your own Delf, yeah, it's very good over in the UK because the audiences understand and you can do whatever you like.
So there's an understanding there that this is new stuff. It may not work, but
yeah.
It might work.
Yeah. People go up with their notebooks.
They
go up with their notebooks and it puts a lot of pressure on me to write new stuff. Like I've been, because I live in Camden now, I've just been writing mostly about Camden.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And your living arrangements, I'm sure you get some material out of that.
Yeah, I'm living with like seven people. Like I'm sharing a room with my partner.
In a mansion or?
in an ex-council flat. So I live in the ex-sitting room. It used to be the sitting room and now it's the new bedroom. But it's a big bedroom.
Right.
And I have a couch in it and I have my own balcony. So it's practically an ensuite. It depends on how you treat it.
Well, I went somewhere there. I want to come back from there. Thank you very much.
If I was a house seller, that's what I'd say. So, so it's grand. We've no sitting room. So we kind of like, my housemates are lovely, but we meet each other in the hall and we go, hello. And we go off, you know,
yeah.
And do our own thing.
And the Irish are
Two of them are Irish.
Right.
One of them is actually is the daughter of someone I know very well. And I should have asked her. I won't say who it is now. I'll tell you after we're off air.
Right.
So she's really, really nice and she's lovely. And another lady's from Vietnam and she's incredible because she's working with cancer and she's a scientist and right. I'm just a comedian. Do you know what I mean? We're living together. I'm like, you're making a difference to the world.
You are making people laugh.
Yeah, that's true. But come on now. I was like, fair play. And there's this lovely American girl as well that I'm living with too. So it's a house full girls and my boyfriend and he's the man of the house.
Right.
Well, our boiler broke a few weeks ago. It made this sound like a jet engine, like this at 4 a.m. I was too afraid to leave the bedroom and then the fireman knocked on the door because the boiler had broken, was flooding everywhere downstairs and I could hear the fireman like talking and go, and she didn't call anyone, there's an emergency, like your whole house is flooded. And I was like, I was trying to Google the problem, alright, I didn't want to open the door in case it exploded.
Oh, he was getting on to you for not
phoning emergency services.
Right.
I thought, you know, you never know when to either.
So will you be down to Mullingar for Christmas Day? Or?
I will. I'm very excited. I'm flying over to my dad because I'm the child of divorce.
Yes.
So I must have my two Christmases. So flying over to my dad and then flying back Christmas Eve to Mammy. And what we're doing is, I'm very excited. What we do is we go to Little Araldi, doesn't matter, go about 4:00, wait for the turkeys to go half price. It's a risky move because 1 year we nearly didn't have a turkey, so that's what we're doing. I've got me. It's like supermarket sweep. We get the crackers and everything for so cheap. It's amazing. Half the frill is the bargain, you know.
So and timing, because they don't say they're going to do it at any particular time.
No, timing is essential.
And then if they have a run on turkeys, you're turkeyless.
I'm my goose is cooked because yes. We're probably getting goose.
Have you been doing that all your life now? How long are your parents separated?
They're separated since the junior cert. I blame them for me not doing that.
Right,
I'm joking.
So have you been sharing Christmas
trees? Sharing Christmases, since? Yeah. Like even my granddad as well lives, so my grandma died about 10 years ago. And sometimes, my granddad last year was like, no, I'm going to spend Christmas on my own. I was like, you're not. I'm going to go over. So my Christmas with him last year was very chilled. What I do is I go to whichever house is the quietest, I go to.
Okay.
For Christmas. That's the way I am. I say it's because I'm a good person, but it's just I like peace.
I'm intrigued by this Lidl Alley thing. And would there be other people in the same situation?
Probably will be. I'd say.
So you're waiting for the
Now, just an announcement here.
Is that what they say?
Run in
all
like super...
All turkeys half price.
As soon as I see the stickers come out, bang, in, gone. Lovely. I mean, yeah, it's just the thrill of it. It's like a like a scratch card or something, you know. But one time...
You feel you're getting one over on them as well.
You do. But one year they didn't have cranberry sauce and I regretted it very highly. I had a Christmas without cranberry sauce.
It's so easy to make.
I know.
It's so easy to make.
I couldn't even get cranberries though, right?
Oh, you couldn't get cranberries, even... right? Okay.
Yeah.
You have a website, do you?
I do have a website.
Tell them what it is.
It's alisonspittle.com, but if you go to Ticketmaster now, you'll find my
alisonspittle.com. So you start on the 25th of January.
In Carlow.
Carlow, and then Galway.
Galway.
Spirit Store, you're in the Venue Theatre in Rathoath, Central Arts, Waterford, Whale Theatre, Greystones, Dríocht. In
Blanchardstown,
Dolan's in Limerick, the Barrows in Clonakilty. I didn't know they did comedy.
Auckland's
in Cork and Vicar Street then. You've done Vicar Street before.
I don't. So this is my difficult second album.
Oh, is it right?
Do you know what I mean? And I'm in Mullingar sometime as well. I don't know which day.
I don't see it there.
That's not your fault. Do you know what? It's probably not on my website, is it, Ray?
No.
Well, that's probably the reason why it's not selling as well as the others.
And that's a home gig.
I know, home gig.
Home gig, yeah.
Probably half the people in the audience will be the jokes that they're about. Yeah. It's there to listen to make sure I don't libel them.
Yeah. And what are you hoping for Christmas? You
world peace.
Right.
No, what am I hoping for Christmas? A water flosser. Oh. I've asked my dad for a water flosser.
What's a water flosser?
It flosses your teeth. It pushes water in between your teeth.
Oh, it's like a little pump.
Little pump, yeah. You see, Christmas is the time where you ask for electronic personal hygiene things, isn't it?
Yes.
Because you'd never buy an electric toothbrush for yourself.
You wouldn't.
You wouldn't.
I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
You try and get a present that nobody would ever buy for themselves.
Yes.
You
know. Absolutely.
And then they go, wow, I would never buy that for myself. And if somebody says that, it means you've got the perfect present.
You've done the perfect present. Yes. That's totally it, yeah. There's only so many times you can buy people socks, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scrabble is by far and away the best board game. It is a different game every time you play it. I suppose it is more for adults than children, says Aina. And Aaron here, love Alison Spittle, used to love playing Ludo, Frustration, and Connect 4.
Connect 4.
When I was growing up in the early 90s.
Connect 4 is amazing because you can really set your game apart with the first three moves. I've been taught by a lady of how to.
All right.
You always aim for the middle. So you go for the middle, and if you get like three together with two either side, that can be used.
I love those, you know, those huge ones.
Oh, so do I.
Yeah, the playground size.
Yeah, get serious then.
Yeah, yeah.
Normally I only see them in playgrounds or places where I'm drunk. And they're both, you know?
They're probably not that big, you just think they are.
Yeah, exactly. I love Cluedo.
Yeah.
I love Cluedo because that's do you know what they say?
Like, what's the one that...
The murder.
Yeah, is that...
That's Cluedo.
Oh, that's Cluedo, right. So and Ludo's different. There's Cluedo and Ludo.
Cluedo and Ludo, two very different ones.
Yes, yeah.
My favourite game to play is Pointless. You know the daytime TV show?
Yes.
They have a game based on that.
Ah.
And I love Pointless so much. Me and my boyfriend's first ever holiday was to go watch Pointless live, like football for us. And we were supporting the people that were on the show.
Brilliant.
So I get very competitive.
Speaking of football, I believe they're chanting your name at Liverpool.
Are they?
Yeah, the Liverpool, not Liverpool, Arsenal. The Arsenal keeper is called Alisson.
Alisson, I'm a West Bromwich Albion guy.
Oh, yeah, so you wouldn't be interested in that.
But do you have a recording of it? I'll put it on before Vicar Street and pretend it's for me.
We'll get one for you. That's good. So stay with us because Lisa's coming back in. She's going to sing us out. It's the Liverpool keeper, not the Arsenal keeper. Thank you very much. I got it right the first time.
Never doubt yourself, Ray.
There you go. Stay with us. We're going to take a commercial break and Lisa Lamb's going to come back in and Alison Spittle's staying with us and we'll do that after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Lisa Lamb joins us in Studio 10 again and Lisa, you and Alison were in a play together last year.
Yes, we were. We did the 24-hour plays in the Abbey Theatre last January, which was
incredible. You were the princess, weren't you?
I was the
Jasmine.
We were paired together. It's an amazing thing. It's for charity and it brings together actors, writers, directors, and basically new work is produced over 24 hours and performed live on the stage. So you don't know when you go into it, you don't know. Everyone has to bring a prop and you put the prop in the centre of the room and then the props get used in all the different shows. Uh-huh. But myself and Alison were teamed together.
It was brilliant. Yeah, I played the Queen. My prop that I brought was a painting of myself. that someone had made for me.
Right.
I was like, put that in the plane.
Did they get it back, Alison? Did they get it back?
Actually, it's in my mother's shed at the moment.
Perfect place.
Yeah, my mother's shed looks like a shrine to me.
You know that David Norris has 14 portraits of himself in his house.
Where would you put them? You'd use them as coasters.
He's quite a large house.
Right. Yeah. You use them to hold your dinner on or something like that if you're watching the telly.
So did you commission somebody or did you just do it unsolicited?
They did it now it was my friend Erin. She's amazing.
She's very good. Right.
But I did, so when I lived in Dublin, my neighbours recognised me off the telly and made a photographic mosaic of my face. And a little girl knocked on my door, and I live in an apartment, so I was like, who's knocking on my door? And I answered the door and it was this little girl, and she handed me this mosaic of photos of my face, right? And her mother was hanging behind her a little bit, and I go, thank you very much for doing this. And then the mother goes, no, it was my husband. My husband made this, right? So I kept looking at her. I was like, oh, you're very talented. I kept pretending it was her that made the mosaic and not the husband.
I'm saying nothing. So you act as well, Lisa Lam. I didn't know that. And you played Soroka in Russell Carroll Kelly's.
I sure did, with Paul Harris, my legendary friend. Yeah, they were. Those books coming to life on stage is a real treat. So yeah, I'm going to be back in the Abbey next year as well, doing some theatre, so looking forward to it.
The album's out in 2019, which is going to be called Beautiful Thing. Is it? No.
But Beautiful Thing is going to be on the record.
And what's it going to be called?
I still have to name it. Any takers?
Right. But you still have to name it?
Yeah, I've written all the songs myself, so there's a couple of names in the air from different tracks that I'm thinking I'm going to use.
I'll give you a name.
You come back and sing a couple of songs when it's out.
I'd love to.
But you're going to sing us out with Sarah McLachlan's Winter Song.
Yes. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Thank you.
This is how I see you in the snow on Christmas morning. Love and happiness surrounds you as you throw your arms up to the sky. I see this moment by and by.
That was lovely. Lisa Lam, Denise on violin, Shane on keyboards. Thanks very much, Lisa.
Thank you,
Alison Spittle is all over the country next year. Happy Christmas to you all. Mary
Happy
Wilson's on
Merry
the way.
Christmas.
We're back tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.